non-alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 12th, 2017. As Jesse said, this is my home group, and it's been my home group for pretty much that whole time. What I was thinking about, so I was on a plane for like 6 hours today, and what I was thinking about a lot was like how much over that time, like, I've changed and you guys have changed me. And I was thinking about, like, if you asked me 8 years ago, would I have, like, made sure my flight got home, even though I had to wake up at 6 a.m. on no sleep to get to my home group, would I have done it? I would have said no. And today, like, this is so important to me that I'm here. Also, on that flight here, I got a reminder that I am an alcoholic. I was sitting in, like, the ninth row or whatever, and this guy behind me orders, like, vodka, orange juice, and I'm like, that sounds really good. And then I'm, like, thinking, I'm like, in about an hour, I'm about to be celebrating 8 years at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And immediately that thought went away, and I thought about, like, all the other things that I'm driving here, and, like, all three of my sponsees call me, and I'm like, damn, just crazy. And the person that I asked to speak has bared witness to, like, the absolute change that's happened in my life. And I've asked this person to speak here a couple of times because they've gotten to, like, see it from a third person perspective, and, like, I respect their sobriety so much and what they've done and, like, gone through and how they've handled situations that are just absolutely massive. And I remember 6 years ago, we were in, like, Georgia for a young people's conference, and we were, like, wrestling in the Waffle House parking lot, and, like, stone cold sober in a Waffle House parking lot. And, like, now, like, I bought a house, they're talking about buying a house, and we're just, like, living these much different lives than then. And it's just, like, a wonderful thing to see what can happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've asked Jess to speak for me.
Hi, I'm Jess. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
My sobriety date is April 6th of 2014, and it's an honor to be here. Congrats to the celebrants. Those are big milestones. They especially were for me. I've known Marlon for a little bit, probably his whole sobriety, and I really don't remember when we met or how, but I do remember getting closer, and you remind me a lot of myself when I was younger. You were like everybody's little brother, and watching you mature, like, helped me mature, and I always get reminded of that whenever I see somebody new coming in. And I really do believe it's not the amount of, like, time you have. It's really, like, what you put into it. Like, no matter how far down the road we go, you're still the same distance from the ditch. And I've watched that be true over the last year. I've seen a lot of people go out recently. And it's just a good reminder because I can see people come in and it reminds me of all these things that, like, helped me stay sober and helped me when I first came in. And I can, the disease is so sinister. Like, a lot of times I like to think that it's not really there, that it really was just about the drinking. And then something happens that, kicks me and I'm like, oh, like, this really is something, I was really recently reminded about, like, gratitude, because that's one, like, it can waver for me, and that's so sneaky, like, because looking around, like I'm in a room full of people that I'm sure, like, I could pull somebody aside and be like, I'm having a rough day, and they would listen, even if it's for 5 minutes, and I would feel understood. I wouldn't feel judged. I can't do that at work. I can't do that. There's nowhere else like this community where I could go to a different country and feel almost safe. Like I can share things here. And I really am grateful for that. I used to hate gratitude speakers when I came in because I was like, they're so full of it. Like, there's no way. Like, I that's what I thought. And but that's not true today. It doesn't mean I feel grateful 100% of the time. I was told recently, like, there's a difference between having a good day and having a joyful day. And I didn't know the difference. And I was kind of salty about it, actually. I was like, well, I'm going to have a crap day today because this. and this. And then I like took a step back and I was like, wait a second, like, why does it have to be that way? I can start my day over at any time. Even if I'm like really tired and don't want to be at work and whatever. You know, I didn't know what the term alcoholic meant before I got here. My parents don't have that. My like close family members don't. My biological grandfather apparently was an alcoholic, schizophrenic, abusive. And so I kind of like thought that was it, or like TV where they have like a brown bag and they're dying on the side of the road. And so it never really occurred to me that I could be an alcoholic. I got sober when I was 22. And the first time I was called an alcoholic, indirectly, I was 18, and I just didn't think that that was a thing. I like drank alcoholically, like right off rip. The first time I ever got drunk, I had a 24 pack of beer. I drank 23 of them and shared one and regretted that one beer the whole night and thought about it until the next day, until I drank again and was like, man, I'm never sharing again. Selfish. But that's how I was. I used to black out a lot, and fight. And actually when I came in and they were like, you have to do this like step where you write resentments, I'm like, I'm not an angry person. Every time I drank, from I think when I was like 18 till I got sober, I blacked out and fought somebody. And if that's not being resentful about something, like, then there's something definitely wrong. But I, you know, and then I've never fought since getting sober, except for Marlon. And those don't really count. But it's changed my life a lot, you know? I never wanted to do those things. I hated blacking out. I didn't want to hear about what I did. I initially did. That's how I knew my drinking was taking a turn, was that I, at first, was like, tell me everything I did. I want to know. I want to control the situation. And it very quickly turned to, please don't tell me about it, literally covering my ears and walking away, because I would do the same stuff over and over again. And everything I had hoped to be, everything I wanted to achieve as a person, I was doing the opposite. I was doing the opposite. I wanted to be an honest person. Wasn't honest. I wanted to go and graduate college. Dropped out. I didn't want to get arrested. Got arrested. You know, like everything I thought I was going to be as a person, and my extreme people-pleasing would kick in. Like, I couldn't do it. And it never occurred to me that drinking was doing that. It never occurred to me that that had any bearing on anything, because that's how far the disconnect was and how dishonesty works. It never occurred to me ever stop until the court told me to. And I thought that was stupid, because when I came in, they made me go to meetings, okay? And my first arrest that time, I guess it was like my third arrest. Anyway. I'd gotten a DUI, and so they make me go to meetings and sign a piece of paper and whatever, and I was like, okay, cool, but I can't drive, so I just stayed after this IOP meeting and stayed there, and it was like a late-night meeting. It was a candle lit in some Victorian house with couches and stuff, and they had candles lit. It was a candlelit meeting, and I didn't know what that was anyway. But they had the lights turned down, everybody's whispering, they're talking about God, they're asking me for money. And I was like, it's definitely a cult. And I really don't know why. Like, is there separation of church and state? Like, I'm gonna write to the judge. Like, there's no way they've been to these meetings and know what's happening. But I'm a people pleaser, so I didn't do that. I just kept going back. I was also afraid of getting in more trouble. But I stayed dry through that time. And you know, I like to research stuff a lot, so it's very interesting to me that the first time I was ever called an alcoholic, I never looked into what that meant. I just had my assumptions, dismissed it completely, and kept on drinking for years. And I would listen sometimes to what these people had to say, but I just felt like I had to be there. Also, that first meeting, somebody came up to me with a name that sounded like an alias, sounded totally made up, and she like grabbed my hands and prayed at me and scared me and handed me a book. And, like, you think I was going to, like, dive deep into that? No. Because I research everything except for my alcoholism. And but I did open the book, and I looked, and I saw a doctor's opinion. And I was like, oh, these people know what's up. So I was like, I'm going to read that. I read it, got super mad, never touched the book again. Because they don't have the answer. Spoiler alert. So I was like, okay, well, there's no hope. And then this lady kept calling me. I guess, to check on me. I didn't know what she was doing because, like, I didn't have people like that around me. You know, I was kind of like a stray cat, and I would, like, find other stray cats who like to drink and, like, fight and, like, do things and whatever and get arrested, I guess. And so I didn't really, like, know why she was calling me all the time. It was kind of weird. And, you know, I completed IOP or whatever and did all the things. And it took me 3 weeks, I think, to get my second DUI. And if you do the math, that's within a year. Anyway, Florida doesn't like that, right? So they got a warrant out for me. And I, like, dodged it for a bit. And you know who was there to pick me up? You know who was there to, like, take me back to meetings was all the people I had met. These people who I didn't know, who I actively avoided, who had were calling me, like, selflessly. And I realized something incredible, that they all were things I wanted to be. I wanted to be reliable. I wanted to be honest. I wanted to be all those things. And it never occurred to me that if I stopped drinking, that sobriety could gift me with that ability to be what I wanted to be. You know, I could grow up. I could mature. And that wasn't anything I thought would ever happen. You know, when I got arrested the second time, I stayed dry, but I was like, you know, I've given what I could, but I've taken more than I've given in this world. And I thought I was being logical, being like, I'm going to euthanize myself. I had suicidal thoughts and I wanted to die. And that was like, that was what happened. And I didn't want to not talk to my mom. She had, like, moved away to get away from me, to California. And I called her and was like, hey, I guess it was to say goodbye, but I ended up, like, breaking down. And she got me into, she got me Baker Acted, so, which turned out to be a really good blessing, you know. I got in there, and they were, like, talking to me about all these different options of doing IOP and PHP at FRC and all that, and I was like, I have no idea what any of that, what that means. And all of that's just, like, long-term treatment they wanted me to do, and honestly, I was so desperate at the time, I was just willing to do whatever, and that's what I lacked seriously the first time, was I obviously didn't do steps. I didn't get the first part of the first step, the unmanageability. Like, I didn't understand that part. I knew that once I started drinking, I couldn't stop, but I never gathered that part either. And so there's all these steps. Willingness certainly wasn't willing, but this time I was willing to do whatever it took. And I'm a recovering Catholic, so, like, I thought that getting on your knees and saying God was reserved for religious people, and I thought I was going to be a hypocrite doing that, or that I didn't deserve it. But for the first time, like, on my own volition, I got down on my knees in the psych ward and, like, prayed. And it wasn't, like, a big spiritual experience or anything changing. It was just, like, me being willing and me being able to, like, humble myself. Because I used to be embarrassed of, like, getting on my knees by myself with nobody watching. Like, I guess I'm embarrassed of myself. I don't know what was happening, but It was another, like, one of those things was like, wow, like, this could change. Things could change. I didn't know things could be any different than they were. You know, I only knew blacking out and being out of control, you know, or fighting or, like, ending up in the hospital and, like, not knowing how I got there. Like, that's what I thought life was. And so it made sense to me why I wanted to end it. I mean, I got sent to treatment and I got out, and it was scary because I was in a bubble there. I had been there for 4 months, and it was like a safe zone, and I got out, and I kind of did what everybody said to. You know, I did the old AA waltz for a couple years where I did steps 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and I would switch sponsors every time. And I was like, no, I really like lists. I really do want to do the fourth step, liar. And, like, that was the other thing, is, like, I didn't realize how much emotional sobriety comes into play, but I was not emotionally sober. And I, at 2 years, like, my first year, anything inconvenient, somebody cuts me off in traffic, I want to drink, you know? Like, I stubbed my toe, today's not my day, everything's horrible, I'm going to go drink. And then the second year was, I wanted to die. And that was because I didn't do my steps. I wasn't doing that. And the people who pulled me out of that were actually people in the Florida Conference of Young People in AA. It isn't all just, like, drinking energy drinks and staying up. Like, that's part of it. But I really found, like, a home in the people who are around me in Gainesville. And they pulled me out of it. I simultaneously ended a relationship, got a new sponsor, got a therapist, and like full-fledged, the first thing with the sponsor, she was like, why haven't you done the fourth step? And I almost immediately did that. And after doing like fifth step with her, I felt lighter and everything changed. And I can still be reminded of that, you know? A couple years ago, I had like one of the worst points in my sobriety. I had ran a call. I'm a first responder. I ran a call on a friend, and I had to pronounce him. And a couple days later, my wife cheated on me, and then I broke my leg, and then I got a divorce, and I kept moved, and then all this stuff, and all of that happened. I think within like 3 months, and I used it to start self-pitying, and self-pity is like the devil, you know. That's just my disease, just wearing another mask, where it's like, oh, well, you're going through this, so this is, you're allowed to act however you want. You can act out again. You can be bitter. You can not work on being grateful. Everybody else is doing fine, and it bit me in the ass. It did. I didn't relapse. I didn't go out. Thank goodness. I had a lot of people around me, again, lift me up, and I think that having these connections and being able to, like, feel a part of something was so big for me. Because, I mean, they always say, like, opposite of addiction is connection. That is very true for me. And I would not be here without some of these people, Marlon included. Like, I don't know how many times I've had to, like, call and feel selfish, you know, calling people. But now I see on the other side, when people call me, I feel honored. It's not really a bother to me. That's what keeps me sober. That's my own selfish side, you know? And it's been amazing. I can say that I'm grateful, even if I'm not having a joyful day. Like, I've had, you know, I have amazing connections with friends. I've been able to talk to them and say things like I never thought I'd be able to say to friends and be so secure in friendships and relationships. I also do have outside help with therapy and all of that. That does help. Shout out to my therapist. But yeah, it's changed so much, and getting to watch other people and watch myself grow up and mature and become somebody I'm actually proud to be is like one of the biggest blessings, and I'm really grateful to have that, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.